The Conservatives are the largest party. They don't have an overall majority at this stage. The Prime Minister called this election because she wanted certainty and stability. This doesn't seem to look like certainty and stability.
Welcome to Polling Politics. Hello and welcome to Polling Politics. I'm Joe Twyman from Delta Poll.
And I'm freelance journalist Marie Leconte.
Every week, Marie and I round up the key political stories and statistics of the week, and we're also joined by a top guest from the world of politics to delve into the polling and public opinion in more detail. Our guest today is the MP, Dr. Stella Creasy. Hello.
Doctor? It's only the bank manager calls me that.
Oh, and people on planes, presumably, when you upgrade, but then have to save people's lives.
And then I have to admit that I am absolutely hopeless. If you're having a heart attack, I can tell you why you've got no mates, because I'm a doctor of psychology, not anything. And the kind of psychology my mother pointed out, I couldn't start a practice. Generally hopeless. It's only any good with a bank manager. Don't hate me.
Let's not rule out explaining why we don't have any mates. Could be useful. Would you prefer to be called Stella?
What else are you going to call
me? Stella!
You can call me Mom, but it would be a bit weird.
Mom?
Dr.
Mom? Juliet Bravo sort of way, you know?
Dr. Creasy has been Labour MP for Walthamstow since 2010. Since being in Parliament, she's led campaigns on such things as payday loans and reproductive autonomy. But I want to begin by asking an important question. Stella, you were born in 1977.
That is true.
I was born in 1977.
What did we do wrong?
You moved to Colchester as a child.
I did.
I moved to Colchester
as a child. Are you stalking me?
Your mum worked teaching children with special educational needs.
She did.
My mum worked teaching
now you're freaking
children
me
with
out.
Special
you're really
educational
freaking
needs.
Me
well,
out.
My question is, are you actually my twin sister?
Oh, God, I hope not.
Is that because you've met my real sister and you're worried about the fight that would ensue?
No, it's because I know my real brother. that's very freaky. I moved to Colchester from Manchester. So from multicultural, dead exciting Manchester at the cusp of the indie revolution to small town Essex. You can tell it went down really well. And even now, 20 odd years later, I'm totally over it.
I went from Buckinghamshire.
Yeah, similar, I can tell. Yeah, yeah.
Same sort of.
Whereabouts in Colchester were you?
In Wivenhoe.
Which that's not really cold.
Well, whereabouts were you?
I was in Colchester town.
Which bit?
This is fascinating. Can I just say?
Well, just for those listening, Lexton Road is very much the sort of Chelsea of Colchester, and Wivenhoe is very much the Hampstead. So I think it tells you everything you need to know. And that's all for Polling Politics this week.
I always get told off by Will Quince, who is the MP for Colchester, for doing Colchester town, and it's a very changed. I have to say, like, it is now very posh when I go. Back then,
well,
it was less.
Now people do get out of the bath when they have a wee, certainly.
It was the sort of place, because it was a uni town and a military town. So,
and also one of the country's largest areas of social housing as well. So quite a combination.
But it basically meant from the age of 13, I could get into any club I wanted to, because they were desperate for girls to go. So the Hippodrome, I used to go down Hippodrome on a Thursday night, and the Playhouse, where there weren't any chairs, so nobody could throw them at each other. Classy joint. But also I used to go to Essex Uni to go and see bands.
I used to go to the Playhouse and the Hippodrome as well, and not get in.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I was the person inside waving at you.
Yeah.
Under 5 foot tall, but totally saying, yeah, I'm 18.
Yeah, and yet at 6 foot four, no one would believe me. But we didn't actually come here to talk about Colchester, despite Marie's insistence that that's all we focus on today.
Yeah.
It's a very warm day today. We'll come on to that later. But fortunately, the office we're in Portcullis House, is air conditioned, which is perhaps just as well, because is there a chill in the air?
Jesus Christ, Joe.
That is terrible. It's just as well that it is.
If you think that's terrible, I'm afraid it's all downhill from here.
Yeah, I am 5 months pregnant, which also adds to your body temperature. So this morning I was sat in a school hall with a bunch of kids literally sweating down my face. We could, like, who's the crazy lady? That's the MP. Hi, kids! So I'm very grateful for the fact that this is not a sauna just yet.
So should we start with the news of Joe Swinson becoming leader or the news of Boris Johnson becoming leader? What do you think is the more important?
Oh, now that's, you know, apples and pears. I think, you know, you have to congratulate people when they win, even if they're not from your own political party. Because it's being nice and well brought up. Some of us are.
Well, you lived in Lexington.
Yeah, exactly. I was in the posh bit. You go to Colchester, Marie, then you will understand.
We'll do a tour. We'll do like the Radio 1 roadshow used to. Yeah. We'll do a polling politics
roadshow. In fact,
road
didn't
show.
The Radio 1, you went to Harwich one year. I remember and going, Clacton, yeah.
Clacton as well, that's another thing I didn't go to.
I will walk into the Thames.
Clacton was a classy joint. I knew a guy called Darren from Clacton who had a car genuinely with stiletto heel marks in the roof of the car. That was a classy joint with a classy guy.
I'm not going to tell my story.
It was Darren your mate, wasn't he?
you changed your name.
I call all my friends called Darren.
No, so I mean, obviously, having a new Prime Minister, I mean, I'm not saying that the REM song It's the End of the World as We Know It has been cycling through my head for the last couple of hours.
But do you feel fine?
Not particularly, no. Trepidation probably underestimates quite what I feel about it. And I think we're just waiting now, obviously, to get the reshuffle. So one thing that was fascinating about Theresa May was when you saw her first reshuffle, you thought she spent 6 years sitting in cabinet going, one day, you'll be gone, and you'll be gone, and you'll be gone, and you'll be gone. And she had for that day, she had a brilliant day. She had no idea what she's going to do next. And clearly the last 3 years have been exactly that. And we've seen other leaders in other political parties have been like that. It's a good test about whether a new prime minister is going to come in and go, do you know what, I've won, and therefore it's my responsibility now to genuinely unite people, genuinely go, how can we bring people together? Doesn't look like Boris has learnt that lesson from what he's saying. So it will be interesting to see quite who he appoints and what message that tells us about how he's going to approach the next, 12 weeks, which is all we've got until October the 31st, which is obviously Brexit.
100 days exactly.
Oh. But I think, from the names we've sort of had floating around so far at a time of recording, it doesn't seem like any of the sort of wetter Tories who decided to maybe back Boris, to get a bit of power essentially, are going to get into cabinet. So it's kind of
like
just sucks to be them.
The triple sec cabinet. It's like so dry.
it's kind
of burning your mouth.
We do have this strange situation where, of course, Boris Johnson doesn't actually become Prime Minister until after Prime Minister's Question Time tomorrow. If you were Theresa May, how would you be approaching this?
How drunk would you be?
Would you just screw you guys, I'm going home.
It's that horror film, I can't remember what it's called, the one where the law doesn't operate for 24 hours.
The Purge.
The Purge. It's going to be the Purge for the next 24 hours. And she's going to, there'll be a whole load of sudden laws and rules, and she'll just be like, I'm going to do it.
I'd turn up in jeans.
I love the idea of her doing a reverse PMQs, so just going from backbencher to backbencher, being like, and the honourable member for X, never could fucking see your face. And just go around everyone.
I think she's going to go, zip it. You would just be like, it's my last day. All of you have made my life an utter misery for 3 years. You've done nothing. We've done nothing. You especially of all. It'd be like a whole, as I say, actually, it would be a nice bookend, wouldn't it? Because I think she started her first day addressing some old scores. Maybe she should end her last day doing exactly the same thing. Because, 14 hours later, when you're going to have Boris Johnson as Prime Minister, all will be forgiven.
Really, the rehabilitation of Theresa May starts now. I think we could. Totally, or really started.
Totally. That book tour is probably already booked.
What would you do next if you were her?
Go on a walking holiday. No.
Go on a long walk off a short note.
Look, I actually think, genuinely, Parliament at the moment is a bit like a lot of overtired toddlers. Everybody is frustrated. Everybody wants their own way. Nobody's really talking to each other in all political parties. It's not a great look for our democracy, and I don't think the Conservative Party, or indeed the Conservative current government, is going to be any different. I think everybody needs at least a week out just to sleep, calm down, eat properly. I sound like my mother.
Also my mother.
Just kind of like, seriously, kids, take some time out. And I think if I were Theresa May, I would, because it would be very tempting to lash out. I think even if you think she's been a terrible Prime Minister, which I do, you can't help but feel the human side of it's an impossible situation. Now, she wanted this. I have a friend of mine who has a phrase, if you want the bicycle, you have to ride it. Like, if you're the person who wants to be Prime Minister in that circumstance post David Cameron, you have to take responsibility for what happens next. And I don't actually think she has yet. But it has been to watch truly off. It's like watching somebody do bad stand-up, and you don't feel hatred. You just want them to come off the stage now and, have a long drink and just put it down to experience. But one of the other things I always think in life is things can always get worse. And, Thursday will prove that. So I say, she's probably going to have the quickest rehabilitation, because it will be like, oh, can we go back to Theresa May? Because at least it's not Boris Johnson.
Yeah, I agree that it's kind of unhelpful. Like, a lot of people seem to be talking about Theresa May and kind of her legacy as a sort of binary choice, as kind of either saying, nothing was her fault, she was kind of dealt a terrible hand, or saying she was the worst prime minister who'd ever lived, etc. When actually, those things, I think, can work very well together. You can say she made lots of terrible choices,
yeah.
But also people were shit to her in a way that they probably shouldn't have been. And like these two can coexist quite happily, I think.
Yeah, so I don't think we should denude her that she made very bad choices, and she consistently made very bad choices, even when people were trying very hard to tell her not to. I think what is interesting is that Boris, I think, is different, and Boris wants to actively make bad choices for the shits and giggles. I mean, that's what's so frightening about it. You know, here is a man. I saw the first tweet from Nigel Farage that was like a kind of macho game of chicken. It's like, are you going to go for it on the 31st of October? Only good guys. And you think, please don't do that with our country, please. You know, like, let's not turn the future into the worst pissing contest ever, because actually there's quite a lot of things at stake here.
Is there such a good thing as a really good pissing contest? Taking
you obviously lived in the wrong parts of Colchester.
What would you say was Theresa May's biggest mistake then?
Look, I think the way in which she approached Brexit, it's very, very obvious now. And I think it was obvious at the time that, I didn't even vote for Article 50. I didn't even hell in Article 50. Not because I thought right from the start, this is a terrible idea, but because I thought this is a terrible process. And that sounds a bit nerdy, but you could just see starting a clock running without any idea about where it was going to go was not going to put you in a strong... People bang on about, don't take no deal off the table. It's like, no, don't set yourself a deadline without any clarity about what you actually want to achieve, because that deadline's going to come up very quickly. And I actually think it started then, the kind of bravado and sense that somehow being bullish was the way to deal with a situation when we were the minor partner. You know, it's just on sheer numbers alone, Europe is a big block of different countries with lots of different interests, and we kind of acted like it was one uniform group. I'm on the Council of Europe, so I go out to talk to lots of European politicians quite a bit, and they act like we're that awful, awful man your aunt married, you know, 20 years ago. Finally, she's divorcing him and you're not going to have to deal with him at Christmas. And they could not wait for us. So going into that situation with this kind of puffed up idea that somehow we were going to get everything we wanted if we just dug our heels in a timescale that we'd set, just seemed to me catastrophically stupid as a way to start something, which was a really complicated, very delicate negotiation.
Well, thank goodness we've moved on from that.
Yeah, yeah, but, you know, as I say, go back to things can always get worse. A year ago, we were all arguing about whether her deal would be good enough. Now, like, no deal is a very real prospect.
I think the Lancaster House speech was when it started going like downhill quite steadily, of kind of putting all of those red lines around her and kind of like binding her and not quite understanding what those red lines would mean, I think, at the time. So saying, you know, obviously that we would not accept X or Y or Z, but as far as I can tell, not quite getting that if you didn't get, you know, X, Y or Z, you would lose sort of, you know, like three equivalent things. And yeah, just from there, it's just tumbled and tumbled and tumbled.
Boris Johnson addressed the crowd at the announcement of the result and asked them, are you daunted by what's ahead? Should everyone be daunted by what's ahead?
Is it his equivalent of going, are you feeling lucky, punk? It's kind of, I thought you were going to pick up on him calling everyone dude. I mean, you sort of think the Big Lebowski is just rolling around going, please, you know.
I've actually got traumatic
go
amnesia
away.
About that.
Yeah. You should be daunted because he's our big, important... Look, even if you think Brexit is a good idea, if you think there is a deal to be done, that's still a daunting thing. And I just think you have to have the respect for Britain as a country and for its future to think, this is quite a big deal. It will take quite a bit of work and maybe we should show a bit of humility. As I say, what's been really striking over the last couple of years of being on the Council of Europe is just how that frustration generically with the UK has hardened. Like, you know, nobody wants to take us for a cup of tea anymore. Nobody, you know, because they have this sense, not just that we're all like Boris, but that we're all like Farage. And that's really sad because, I mean, I think people like me bear responsibility for the situation that we're in, because we took for granted that people kind of got why it was good to be part of the union, why it was good to work with other countries, that generally, you know, we could go out and work with other European countries on our own terms. And actually that isn't the case. And it's been a hard wake-up call for all of us who think that this stuff matters, that we're in this position now. That's not funny, but it's true.
Try again and make us happy.
Yeah, it's just all Boris's fault. Yeah, terrible. Labour's done nothing wrong. We're great, you know.
But no, I can really agree, and I think it's quite similar to the immigration thing as well, of kind of people waking up at some point and saying, but actually, you know, there's been lots of anti-immigration people talking about it again and again for years. But it's not just that, it's the fact that no one, you know, in kind of recent memory has made the positive case for immigration. So obviously you can wake up after a while and say, actually, is the fault of those people kind of saying bad things and misleading things for years. But also there's never been anyone to kind of counter them. So the blame is definitely a thing to be shared.
When you look at the polling on this, and when the public were asked if they thought it would generally be a good or a bad thing if Boris Johnson became the next Prime Minister, 34% of the public say a good thing, 44% of the public say a bad thing. When you look at all the different groups, you find that Among Conservative leavers, 67% think it's a good thing. But compare that to Conservative Remainers, it's only 39%. Even Conservative voters at the last election, 52% think it's a good thing.
Oh, the cursed number.
In that instance, it's 52-27 rather than 48.
So is that, I mean, because obviously normally when someone gets elected, there's a bit of a bounce because people, not unfairly, say, oh, well, okay, let's see what you're made of. Let's see what you're going to do. Is that the worst starting kind of ratings for a new prime minister, or has there been somebody even lower?
Well, 34% actually is not bad if you think that the Conservatives themselves were only holding around 25%. So it could be that it's.
Yeah, no, I am aware that all politicians have a, like look, right now, estate agents and secondhand car salesmen are looking at me going, mate.
What really interests me is the difference between men and women in this data. Yeah. So this was data that we did at Delta Poll just earlier this week. 43% of men think it's a good thing, 25% of women. Really big difference then. What do you think that might be down to?
Is it because we're better?
There's so many easy jokes there. So many ways of going that. But why don't we let you come to your own conclusion, Joe? What is it about general knowledge that women grasp quicker than men?
I'm just going to glare at you.
I'm not going to speculate. I was simply leaving it open to interpretation. It will be interesting to see whether that gap is maintained, or whether he does get some sort of... bounce. It's not an ideal situation, but as you said, it could be a lot worse. And
just for avoidance of doubt to anybody from Momentum listening, of course I don't want Boris Johnson, of course I want a Labour government. But actually, if people start from the perspective that all politicians are going to let them down, everything's terrible, everything's awful, if you're on the left when your job is to try and persuade people that collective action and working together is worthwhile, that is 10 times harder than people at least thinking, okay, there are choices and different directions to go, which one should we go in? And what depresses the kind of plague on all your houses stuff, I joke about the secondhand car salesman and the estate agents, but it's very real and it is very toxic, because it's sort of how we end up in a situation where people think, why not have a prime minister who will at least be, you know, shocking on telly and it'd be worth watching.
Do you think that now he's won the vote of the membership, Boris Johnson will move to a more conciliatory position? Can you see that happening?
Well, not initially from this reshuffle. I don't think anybody should underestimate Boris Johnson. We had to deal with him as London mayor. And, you know, there's a reason why he's got himself into the position that he's in. What I do think is that the numbers are not on his side. If you think we're at a point where they have a parliamentary majority of 3 right now, obviously there's the Brecon by-election, who knows what will happen with Charlie Elphick, but the chances of just getting anything done, and actually one of the things I think any prime minister has to be able to prove is their capacity to make things go forward. I mean, that's one of the downfalls for Theresa May. We just got to a point where it wasn't even a lame duck kind of government. It was a totally dead duck government. And actually, all parliamentarians on the whole don't want that, because it does feel like you're living Groundhog Day again and again and again. We all keep saying Groundhog Day, and I think at some point Bill Murray's going to go, can you stop like insulting my film? Because at least my film had an ending. You know?
And was fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, because I think just watching the new the No Deal vote, was it last week? I think the amendment, like the majority of 41 against kind of proroguing Parliament to prevent No Deal from happening. That is actually quite a large majority for the times we live in. Like 41 is actually quite a lot. So I'm not sure Team Boris really looked at that and thought, well, great, you know, we're about to come in and get to do everything we want to do. Yeah. It'll be back to what was it like? What, you know, which is a very good bill, but was it the Animals and Circuses bill or something? Like that was quite recent.
Yes, Wild Animals and Circuses.
Yes, no, exactly. So
we've
probably
got the
that
Kew
level
Garden
of
bill today or tomorrow or something. You know, big stuff.
Exactly. That level of policy making has to happen at the moment, because anything else, there's no majority for it.
Yeah, so he's got to do something, because he won't be able to do anything. The risk with Boris, I think, is that. And say why I was slightly wary of that quote from Nigel Farage is, rather than see this as a thing where you actually have to act like a leader, I mean, you know, you are to the victor the spoils, you can be magnanimous. Will he be shocking? Will he actually kind of push people to a limit and say, all right, well, let's have a general election then, which he knows that his backbench don't want, as a bargaining pool to get people to play ball on having No Deal? And all of that puts the interests of the Tory party in the backbenches first, rather than anything coherent that, you know, the people coming to me. I mean, I've got a big local European community completely frazzled about what's going to happen to their futures. Lots of people who work in industries that might be importing stuff just kind of going, what's going? People who work in the NHS going, we're back to buying fridges. I mean, it's, you know, it's unheard of.
I still can't really, like, if I wanted to leave the country kind of for good, or at least for a few years, I still can't really do it, because I wouldn't want to do it until the settled status is kind of like definitely done, kind of, well, settled, ironically. And, you know, and I've kind of thought about moving before for a few years and then kind of like maybe come back later. I still can't really do it. And it's the really weird thing as an EU national, I'm actually stuck in Britain in order to be able to stay in Britain in the future.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of going and going and going. And I'm not sure. And I kind of have that chat with my parents sometimes. They're like, you know, do you have any, are you any clear on your kind of like legal status? And I'm just like, nah. 3.5 years.
So basically, you're telling me your parents are checking that you're not going to go back to them.
I mean, you know, my mum just said,
checking. "Yeah, you're not, you're going to be stuck, aren't you, Marie?"
I know she has threatened to write to Number 10 if I have to come back. So please keep her.
Yeah, I also think what's really odd as a feeling is that in the run up to March this year, actually there was quite a lot of public awareness about No Deal. There was quite a lot of discussion about it. I mean, I was getting a lot of people contacting me, just asking very practical questions about what would happen. And that sort of then died down, and you can start to feel that beginning to build up again. But people are more irritated by it. Whereas before they were frightened, actually now they're irritated and angry that the kind of you've all made a mess of it bit is even stronger, rather than that sense that somebody was making a mess of you. See what I mean? I mean, there's nobody who can fix this is that growing sense. That's very dangerous.
So what do you think will happen on the 31st of October?
Halloween.
Someone will knock on your door demanding.
Yeah, I will buy too many boxes of Smarties and then keep all the lights off in my house pretending that I'm not there. Hey kids in Walthamstow, I love you really, but sharing is not a good thing. Look, the critical thing I think probably will be September, in that obviously we've got just by the timetable, so Boris doesn't technically become Prime Minister until tomorrow afternoon, so we've got one parliamentary day left, which could, I mean, you know, could be exciting, who knows, but I think
could be
in general,
really exciting.
Well, I think in general probably it's by September, partly because by then he'll have had at least 6 weeks to try and talk to Europe and to try and make good on all the kind of promises that he has made, and we will be in the run-up to a no-deal Brexit with a lot of people very concerned about whether progress has been made or not. And you've got 2 weeks before the party conferences come back when you've got parliamentary time. And thanks to that vote a week ago, we're definitely going to have that parliamentary time. The risk is, does he go, well, I'm going to call a general election anyway, because it means that Parliament has to sit down and isn't sitting when the 31st of October comes. I mean, that's, you know, then we are dependent on the goodwill of the Queen to kind of say, no. This is bonkers, you know? And do I think we could get to that point? I think it's entirely plausible, yeah.
I mean, the Queen's seen a lot of bonkers stuff, yeah. over the years.
As an objective point, I would say that September would not be a great date, I think, like a great month to have a general election in, because there's a book coming out which I think deserves kind of, you know, all the oxygen.
Does it?
It's just a very good book.
Is it written by a very fantastic bilingual...
It is. I can't remember her name. Yeah, you know, it's no. The tip of my tongue. But you know, as a general
I've heard
thing,
a lot about
I would
her on
like
Twitter,
to.
I think she's
yeah, haven't you heard it? So yeah. But yeah, that would be my only contribution to Boris, to the Queen, to everyone. Like, you've done enough already to EU nationals. Please do not ruin my big publication month.
There are some technical things about, because we've now got the fixed term Parliament. So what happens if there is a vote of no confidence in the 14 days? And you know, then we really are into unheard of kind of constitutional territory. But
because it's no longer the case that a general election is automatically called.
Yeah,
you do
so you
have
14.
Two
you have 14
weeks.
Days in which somebody else can form a government.
So a government of national unity, for instance, is
or,
not
or the Labour Party could have a pop at it. I mean,
or a government
the numbers,
of national unity.
Yeah, or the numbers are still the same. That you yeah. still have nobody has a majority, so they've got to form some form of coalition, which you know still gives one constant: the DUP, kind of more powerful than everyone.
I want to talk briefly about the role of women in Parliament, but specifically the role of women as Prime Minister. Stella, you've been closely involved in a lot of the recent developments about women in Parliament, and we'll come on to that in a second. But I just want to ask you, if you were to ask the general public how important it was that a Prime Minister were male, what percentage of the population do you think would say it was important, either very important or quite important?
It's going to be a bummer, isn't it?
It's going to be a bummer, whatever the number. This is like when people ask me if Margaret Thatcher inspired me, and I'm like, I don't know, did Silvio Berlusconi inspire you? It's like,
yes.
Like, it's a lady. Well, you want to go to the Bunga Bunga parties.
I want
yeah.
to own a TV channel and a football club.
But no Bunga Bunga. Well, okay. What percentage? I wouldn't like to guess. Whatever the percentage, this is too much.
Marie, what's your guess?
I'm going to say 17%.
Well, the good news is it's lower than 17%.
Yay!
it's only 14%.
So over 1 in 10.
Over 1 in 10.
Nearly
1 in 7
people.
I mean, that is generally lower than I thought it would be, so I will take it.
Well, don't count your chickens, because we asked a series of things that it was important for a prime minister to be. Honest? What do you reckon for that?
Well, God, I hope that was 100%.
You'd hope.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
I don't think it's important. For PM, to be honest, I'd rather have them be effective.
You've been watching too much House of Cards. That's your problem. 80%.
92%.
Oh, thank God
honest.
For that.
Yeah. 91%. We are the 8%. A strong leader. 66% born in Britain, which is really going to upset people when they find
Damn
out
it.
Where Boris Johnson was born. A Christian.
Ooh.
24%.
Yes, because they've just brought out, sorry, not that there are other polling companies available, but the British Social Attitudes Survey was out recently about religion and the sort of people not feeling religious themselves, but thinking that religion is important. So I'd say it's probably that, if not a bit higher.
23%.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, wow. Hey.
The same number that said the Prime Minister had to be heterosexual.
Oh.
If you don't like that, you're really not going to like the figure. What percentage of people thought it was important the Prime Minister should be white?
Okay, white, I'm going to say 38%.
Dr. Creasy,
oh, is it
social psychologist.
I'm actually going to say higher, I think, sadly. I think we're still at a point where people equate that with being British.
Well, the answer is 20%.
Oh.
One in five
That's
British
good.
People.
I mean, that is a Thank lot. God. That is so many people, but also less than I thought. So,
including 13% of Remainers and 27% of Leave voters.
What a surprise.
Among Conservative leavers, 33%. One third of Conservative
Again,
leaders.
My surprise
you see,
face.
I feel relieved it's not as much as I thought, partly because I spend so much of my time getting grief from the people who are probably in your survey that I think they are more, you know, it's the Duck Dynasty point that if you're only ever... So in America, America is very divided by people, whether they watch Duck Dynasty or they don't watch Duck Dynasty. Same right. like Mrs. Brown's Boys here. So if you are only living in that world or getting contact from that world, you think that that's bigger and more important than that perhaps it is.
Can you just explain, what's Duck Dynasty?
If you haven't watched Duck Dynasty, you haven't lived.
I haven't. Is it like
oh my
the
God,
TV show Dynasty, but about
trash
ducks?
No, it's Duck Hunters.
Oh, so I was thinking of something like, what was it called? DuckTales.
When no, we were... that's a cartoon.
Oh, well, yeah.
That is
Duck
not,
Dynasty
that is not
could
trash.
Be the sequel.
I was good thinking of something
telly.
Like Dallas, but with ducks, so I'm not
yeah,
sure.
How many people in your survey want good trash telly? Because that's a proper British strain.
We're getting off topic. The Lib Dems also this week elected a new leader, Jo Swinson. She has been, like you, a passionate advocate of the role of women in Parliament, bring her newborn into the chamber.
Yes.
How do you feel the Lib Dems will develop now that we're entering this supposedly final phase of Brexit and the Lib Dems have a new leader?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, just as I said, you shouldn't underestimate Boris Johnson. You certainly shouldn't underestimate Jo Swinson. I know she's a very capable politician. They've got a very clear message, especially around Brexit, which is obviously the big issue of the day. I disagree with Joe on various things, but I think it's going to be very interesting. And I think we probably will go back to more of a three-party politics. We haven't really had that for the last 6 years, and I think that will change.
Three and not four?
What, with the SNP?
I meant with the Brexit Party.
Well, in terms of physically being in Parliament,
okay.
Yeah. I don't discount the impact of the Brexit Party, because I see that locally. Look, I have a Labour marginal. We have Tory marginal. We have Chingford on my doorstep, and so as part of my local community, we have various members of the Brexit Party around, and you know they have a following. But I think just in practical terms, in what happens in this place, certainly it will be more three party because there will be a recognition that the mood is shifting. The people's identity of being Leave or Remain is almost outstripping their sense of whether they are Labour, Conservative, you know, left or right wing.
And I guess my only thing to say is that I think the bar in terms of what is achieved is quite low for Jo Swinson, because even though actually Vince Gable did a very sort of like decent job, I think there was that thing for people in politics. So occasionally you'd be like, oh shit, the Lib Dems. But and I had it so many times, I genuinely, honest to God, either forgot they existed or kind of like went, hang on. And I've been with people in the pub who've gone, like, hang on, leader of the Lib Dems. And we all kind of sat there for about a minute being like, no, it's not Tim Farron. It's not, oh, Vince Cable. So I think that she's got quite a nice sort of like smooth low bar to clear in terms of like being a good leader of the Liberal Democrats.
Stella, how do you feel about the Liberal Democrats as a political force? You've been a vocal and indeed frequent critic of Jeremy Corbyn. You say
no,
you
haven't.
Sorry?
No, I never criticise an individual. I criticise policies. And it's the same for me with the Lib Dems. I'm not interested in the kind of... I've been a Labour Party member for 26 years. I've never entirely agreed with any Labour leader, and I've always campaigned for Labour governments. I know my own mind. I didn't join a cult, and I'm not intending to start acting like one. I'm very interested in ideas, which is why I'm not a Liberal. I'm a socialist. Like, that's why I'm not in the Liberal Party. That being said, what I do worry about is just the cacophony you've got right now that says that it's not about ideas, it is about individuals. So somehow, you know, if you vote for a certain person, that's job done, rather than, okay, what do we do next? But, you know, what do I feel about the Liberals? Like, I disagreed with the decisions they made in the coalition. I disagree with the policy positions that they have now because they're Liberal rather than socialist. I'm an old-fashioned... I mean, I'm a really nerdy, ideological person. I'm just not tribal. So I've worked with Jo Swinson on stuff where I can agree with her in the same way I've worked with people in the Conservative Party, but that definitely doesn't make me a Tory. Even whatever Momentum say online.
Twitter may disagree at times, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
Yeah, but that's because everyone's politics right now has become like wearing a scout badge rather than actually doing anything. You know, it's become about being able to brand people and say, well, I'm better than you because I'm not that, rather than what you've actually got to get done.
But I think, like, from the journalist perspective as well, I feel like there's been a switch in that, especially kind of like online and on Twitter, in that you can't really have unbiased critique anymore. So if you criticize, I don't know, let's say every time I'll tweet something about, like, taking Labour, like, you know, about the Labour right, I'll have people being like, you know, fucking all these new Euro Corbynite. And I'm like, what? And then I'll tweet something, you know, that's kind of, I don't know, like, will call out something Corbyn's done or whatever, and it's like, yeah, like, stupid fucking Blair. And it's like, people can just critique, yeah, or, you know, the Tories or the Lib Dems or, you know, or whichever party or faction as a critique. And it kind of strikes me as a bit of a problem that it is assumed that you must have an agenda and kind of being from an opposing faction or party in order to, like, sort of, like, not like something.
So genuine, that's why, look, I criticise ideas. I never criticise individuals because I'm just not interested in the psychodrama. Maybe that's because I'm a psychologist, but it's also just too easy to make it all about an individual rather than the ideas. Like, ideas are hard to make happen. We've given up in this place, I feel, on the idea that you can make stuff happen. So now what we're doing is trying to find somebody to blame for the fact that things feel really terrible. What does that say to the outside world? It says, yeah, you know, be frightened, be daunted. That's not a good recipe for a country that needs now more than ever people to actually get stuck in.
Jo Swinson has made a point of saying that she hopes other MPs will join the party and defect. Yeah. You worked with Chukwuemeka when you were Shadow Minister for Business, Innovations and Skills.
I was the consumer. If you have a problem with a consumer item, I know all about the consumer bill. It's really, really sad.
What would be the key thing for the listeners at home to take away from it?
Oh, no, there's no, the worst, this is genuinely true. A woman wrote to me because she'd bought a pair of shoes for her child in a shopping mall. She wasn't even a Walthamstow resident. She wrote to me because the shoes weren't the right colour of white to match the outfit that she wanted for her child, and the shop wouldn't give her a refund. And it was my job to decide. And the worst thing is I thought, actually, I do know what your consumer rights are in this. So rather than going like, a constituent, I ended up writing back to her.
So you did write back?
And I was like, what am I doing?
And what were her rights?
Oh, well, because she bought them after October 2015 when the Consumer Rights Act came into play, it was whether she'd been provided with a reasonable good of a reasonable quality at a reasonable price. And she could claim that it was not a reasonable good because it did not match the standards to which it had been advertised to. I don't know whether she got a refund, but she never wrote back to me. Maybe because she got this very long email.
I will definitely email you about that stuff now.
Don't.
To all polling politics listeners, if you have a consumer rights issue.
Yes, exactly. Like every week from now on, we're going to do your consumer rights with Dr. Stella Creasy.
No, I'm a nightmare. My dad used to stockpile copies of Witch, so it started early. Like my poor partner, when we went to try and buy a sofa, he was like, that one will do. I was like, oh no. No, we have to look at the various options. I mean, there's pictures of him just kind of asleep on a sofa going, please make it stop. Just pick one.
Because Michael Young set up the Consumer Association and wrote the 1945 Labour Manifesto.
He also,
there's a long history of this.
He wrote a very important pamphlet called The White Chip Teacups of Dover, which was very influential to me. This is partly the base of my PhD because
that's
it was
classic.
About how you empower people. Yeah. I mean, that's like, because I'm from the co-op part of the Labour movement. Like, we are probably the most radical, nerdy, grassroots, slightly hippie bit of the Labour Party because it's all about people power. It's what really winds up some of the people of Momentum, when they, because I, you know, it's one of my challenges with nationalisation, because actually that we've got a national rail company in London. It's called TfL. They don't work with or engage with my residents at all. So I don't want that. I want genuinely people-led services. So when people say to me, oh, you know, you're against nationalisation, it's like, yes, because I want to go further. And they kind of go, okay, I'm going to walk away now.
So you and Toby Young must be best mates.
Oddly enough. Toby and I have had many... But here's the thing, I think, is that politics right now is very short on kindness, above all of anything. Because kindness is the thing that allows you to be curious about why people disagree with you. We don't have kindness online. We just have vile and screaming and shouting. And actually, that's happening offline now. So none of us are learning. Like, I always listen to Toby just to make sure that he's wrong. Because you have to keep doing that. You have to keep checking in. That is the Duck Dynasty thing. Like, if you're only ever listening and living in your echo chamber, then you could be really wrong about all sorts of stuff and you'd never know. And you'd get things really badly wrong as a result. Sometimes it's really important to listen to people just to confirm that, yeah, no, they are in a bad place.
Just going back to the Lib Dems, can you see more MPs, either from Labour or the Conservatives, following Chooker and defecting?
I don't get that vibe. I don't think that. I think people feel frustrated, absolutely. I think all political parties, even in the Lib Dems, people feel frustrated, to say, with the state of politics, with our complete inability at the moment to get things moving. But I think that translates into wanting to get stuck into making right the ideas that you came into to politics to make happen. So actually what I get from people is a sense that they really want the Labour Party to be at its best, and it's not at its best right now. That's heartbreaking. And some of it, like anti-Semitism and racism, is not a policy question. That's a soul question. But what we do on Brexit, what we do on education, what we do on public services, those are all fights worth having. And I think people want to have those fights.
Were you sad when the Labour MPs left for Change UK?
Gutted. Luciana Berger is a good friend of mine. And if a friend of yours has to leave the political party that you've all been part of for decades because they are being racially abused and you haven't been able to stop that, like that eats away at your soul. And I would love to get to the point where the Labour Party was in a state where Luciana could come back, absolutely. Like, it's just heartbreaking, the anti-Semitism that you hear. You say, I've experienced it, I see it. And when you see people saying it doesn't exist, you always have a visceral reaction. So yeah, absolutely. When Lou left, it was devastating. It's like therapy now. It's
How do you feel?
Determined to challenge it. Like, I mean, I'll challenge it whether I'm one person on my own or part of an army of people.
And do you feel like you're one person?
Sometimes. The online and the offline are merging. I think it's very important to be honest, especially on things. So sometimes when, you know, I have local party members who say to me, oh, well, there isn't a problem. I feel I have a responsibility to say, no, there is, and here's the evidence for it, because you can't solve anything until you've actually recognised you've got a problem. But we have got a problem.
I'd really like to talk about your work promoting women in Parliament.
Oh, lady stuff. Lady data, lady stuff. I had to call it. So we were trying to do...
Tell us how it came
We
about.
Were trying to get lady data because...
What do you mean trying to get lady data?
Because we don't have lady data in this country.
What is lady data?
This is important for you and the work that you do. So we don't recognise... So Caroline Crowder Perez has written this amazing book about how, because we systematically, the bias is towards men, we miss out. So services, products, all sorts of things don't work for women.
Which is like literally every area of life. I think that's kind of like the thing the book gets at. There's literally everything and anything you can think of, women kind of are disturbed by the fact that...
And in our tax and benefits system, we don't calculate data separately for men and women. So we don't actually recognise where women are penalised by our tax and benefit systems. And when we were trying to explain to government ministers what we wanted them to do, which is to do an analysis and look at the impact on women, they couldn't get... And the best thing all was the Treasury Minister said to me, well, we can't do that because women live with men. And I was like, okay. Okay, we're going to have to start with some very... So we called it lady data to try and explain to them what we were trying to get at and why it would help us track things. You know, if you can't put a label on it, you can't see what's happening to it.
You came into Parliament in 2010.
I did.
How great, if at all, has the improvement for women in Parliament been since then? Has anything changed?
It's changed. It evolves. Like, the way in which you experience So open hostility is dead easy, right? When you get someone like Toby Young who's obsessed about whether he can see politicians' tits on TV, that's pretty obvious and you can call that out. It's all the unconscious bias. It's all the times that I get asked to talk. So it's like when it comes to Brexit and people want me to talk about what impact Brexit has on women. And I'm like, well, actually, I've got a real passion about VAT and the 13th Directive because it's going to be a really big problem for local business. They're like... Yeah, but lady. you talk about lady things, and therefore we need to ask you about lady things. So, oh, tampon tax. I mean, there was a very good time when someone said they were going to do some research about the impact of the tampon tax, and I just was like, tell you what, why don't I take a picture of the back of a packet for you? Because he hadn't worked out whether they were made in Europe or not, and therefore whether there would be an impact in terms of the cost of tampons. And you're like, okay, I can talk about these things because, yes, they're part of an experience. But also one of the things that you're doing is kind of consigning women to a box where you can cope for them. And that's what happens in Parliament. So you hear people now talking about needing women leaders like they're racehorses. So like they're going to run a woman to do it. And it's like, yeah, because I can put that woman in her box and therefore I can know what she's going to do and what she can talk about and therefore what she can't talk about or what she won't know about. We never do that to men. We never ever say, oh, well, you must particularly want to tell us about your theories on vasectomies. And it's like, but I get asked all the time about women's health.
Mm. But I Do you want to hear my theories about vasectomies?
I'd be fascinated to hear your...
Let's keep that tight.
I think it's all just positive thinking.
Bonus episode. But no, I agree. And I think the frustrating thing as well is, right, my side, I guess, of like the media things, like of people who are clearly really well-meaning, but then, you know, especially since kind of like Me Too in Westminster, et cetera, and who, because I've started doing like a few interviews for the book and, you know, other stuff.
Do you have a book coming out?
I think it might be September.
Wasn't sure.
But no, but you know, in everything I've done, there's been the question of, you know, so what's it like being a female political journalist in Westminster? And it's like, well, actually, and I've never realised that I didn't really have anything to say. It's like, yeah, occasionally I experience sexism, like in the rest of society in every area of my life, because society is quite sexist and that's kind of that. But I don't really have anything interesting to say. I've been, yeah, but like similar to you, get invited on staff panels, be like, would you like to talk about what it's like being a woman in Westminster? And it's like, there's quite a lot of us now. Like, it's not really, you know, kind of... I
can't tell you about the experience of being a woman in Westminster, because there are quite a lot of women who have very different experiences of being a woman in Westminster. And what we can tell you about is the common theme where people will ask you that question and presume that your biology trumps your brain in terms of how people will react to you. And that's what hasn't changed. It's just evolved in terms of the different questions that people ask. And people will ask it in a more kind of like, oh, well, you know, the pressure on is to not get cross that they're asking in that way because they're trying to be inclusive. So I always like to talk about the brochelists and the femi bros. So the brochelists who want to tell me that who I sleep with therefore influences what I think, versus the femi bros who totally want to be there for us and totally, they're totally with us and they're an ally. So they'll totally vote with us. But obviously they won't take a stand because, hey, they're creating a space for women. And you're like, do you know what, guys? Just speak up. Just start being part of this conversation in a way that isn't about leaving it all to women to get it right.
And maternity leave in Parliament being an example of that, presumably.
Yeah, well, because I was very clear that it should be maternity and paternity leave. But it's only women that people say, well, of course we can't elect a woman because, you know, she might have a baby and bugger off for a year. We need men to take more responsibility for their kids, because all the evidence shows us that the more children have their fathers involved in early life, the better they develop. So actually, there's a lot of men who need to be fighting for not just shared parental leave, but shared paternity pay, so that actually that financially can be a viable thing to do, because otherwise you've got a lot of kids who are being held back. We never talk about it in that way. We always say, oh, well, it's for women to juggle all these things.
Is shared parental leave the answer, or is it specifically paternity leave?
No, because only 10% of couples in this country take up shared parental leave for men. And that's mainly because it's a hard economic call, because on the whole, men still earn more than women. So a man taking time off, like a third of women get into debt when they take maternity leave, because we don't have proper maternity pay in this country. If we don't want not just the gender pay gap, but actually to lose people and to make family life harder, we need to invest in it. Part of that investment has to be about men being able to be the dad that a lot, you know, most men of my generation do want to be, but the system isn't there to make it work. What happens is that women pay the price both ways.
And finally then, it's rather hot today. My question to you, Stella, and as someone who's 5 months pregnant, your answer may be influenced somewhat. What do you think the ideal temperature is in degrees Celsius?
Not this one. Whatever this one is, not this one. Oh, it's probably about 21, 22 degrees, especially at the moment, because I have Reynolds phenomenon, so I'm normally very cold because I have poor circulation. What pregnancy has done is, because it raises your body temperature because blood's pumping around your body, it's completely weird for me. Like,
so it's actually turned you into a normal human being.
Suddenly I'm like, I'm not a lizard. Oh my God. But yeah, this is way too hot.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. Again, Twitter says, not convinced.
Exactly what a lizard would say. Marie, what do you think the national answer to that is?
I guess it. Mine would be 25 degrees, I think.
25?
Yes.
That's the Moroccan in you coming
well,
out.
Well, yeah, Mediterranean. Yeah. Like, this is, yeah. Anyway, I mean, I could do an entire other podcast just calling you all cowards for how you deal with the weather. But, you know, I'm guessing, I don't know, people are boring here. Like, probably like 19. They'd probably quite enjoy 19.
The answer is actually 21 degrees. So well done, Stella. You're in line
populist,
with
that's everyone. Me.
22% said below 20, which I think is just too cold. But to flip it around, what at what point do you think it gets too hot?
Oh, it's 23. Yeah, being about being British, isn't it? It's like you just need to be able to complain.
22.
Yeah,
it's the answer is not 22,
and it's too cold at 20. So,
what do you reckon?
Well, I'd say probably 25, 26 degrees. People start complaining.
I say 26.
Actually, 28. 28 is the national figure.
Lie, that's what they say. The second it gets over 24 here, everyone's like, I'm going to die. I'm going to melt like a big candle.
But there's a really important window where if it gets, so it gets above 28, 29, then actually crime goes down because people are too hot to do anything. There's lots of psych study on this. So there's that middle point when it's hot, people's blood's up, they're excited, all sorts of good and bad things happen. So you kind of want, you know, this is why, you know, we're not daft. We know that 21 degrees is probably about right because we keep our heads.
That's the optimum criminal temperature.
We keep our heads, but we can keep our shades. It's kind of cool thing.
Yeah, past 28, crime falls until they get the water cannon out, and then everyone starts playing around.
Genuinely true. There are studies to show it, especially in America, in crime waves and heat waves. Oh. They go, yeah.
Well,
see, I didn't waste all those years studying. Useless information.
28% say that above 30 is too hot. I think we can definitely agree that is too hot.
I'd say above 32 is too hot, 32, 33.
At the same time, a quarter think 25 or below is too hot, which is which I think if you think 25 is too hot, you're probably
just
call off. But that explains why we're all sitting here sweating quite so profusely.
That's because I turned the air conditioning off today.
That is just you. Yeah.
Oh well, fine, and producer Nick as well. Okay, that's all from Polling Politics this week. Stella Creasy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll see you again soon.
What a drive-by murder on Nick.
Please remember to like, subscribe, review, all these different things that help people hear about us. And do tell all of your friends and many of the people that you don't know, even if you haven't enjoyed the podcast. This is a Poddo podcast produced by Nick Hilton, and our theme tune is by Joe Button.
For more details, go to podopods.com, and for sales and advertising, email nick@podopods.com.
And yes, that's spelled podotpods.com.